Podcast.
Are we saying podcast?
Welcome back. Two fanboys and a filthy casual back at you once again. This is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold.
It's been a hot minute since we actually like recorded like all together.
Dude. I was
it's
extra enthused when I said my name because it's been so long. I felt so replaced these last 2 weeks.
You know what I wanted to do? I mean, it's sad to, not sad to say, but like right before Lewis is going to say his thing, I was like, this guy's still here, right? Because
I almost said, this is Kersia. Wait, no, I'm not.
Because you can kind of tell, I generally felt a little, not weirded out, but it's like.
No, you weren't.
No,
what are you talking about?
For a little bit. No, I was just like, just for a second.
Quick second. It passed.
Felt slightly guilty that we've been doing this without Lewis. So it's nice to have Lewis back, obviously. You know, the whole dynamic of this podcast works pretty well. It's because it's the three of us.
I don't know. the Kersia one sounded pretty good.
It did.
Shout out to Kersia.
There's room for improvement, obviously.
I mean, yeah.
You know, we do have four mics.
He got that one joke. That's pretty good. Dennis didn't hear it, but no. I got you.
Thank you. He'll hear it when he's editing it. Thank you, Dennis.
And I'll be like, that was quite clever.
That
Lewis.
Was damn clever. I'm glad to have you back.
I'm happy to be back, fellas. I'm glad my seat is still here, nice and warm.
Well, that's not really your seat.
I need you, thank you. I know.
You're actually keeping Kersia's seat.
I know. I'm keeping it warm for a
while. I don't know if there was a sticker.
You call bibs now? Dang, dude. Yeah. Jeez.
We put your face on the...
like if you guys don't know, you know, we did the... a couple of episodes ago, we had our first episode with our... So we're working on creating a separate podcast with
the Gina Dialogues.
The Gina Dialogues that they did their first appearance here with us, and we thought it went pretty well. So we'd love to have them continue. But when we did the episode, Dennis and I were really just footnotes in the episode, just barely I'd say barely acknowledging, but barely. Participating because we wanted them to get a sense of flow for how the podcasts work, and they had such a good time that they said that they'd love to keep continuing what they're doing. And
I mean, we're paraphrasing, but
they're much more dialogue-y. They talk better than we do. Yeah, we learned. Dennis and I learned right away. We are pretty stupid. Like, compared to them?
I know. I mean, I'm not trying to say you guys are
like, yeah, you guys were.
He's like, yeah, if I was there, I wouldn't be like, no. We are, like, they make us look bad.
Their dialogue was, like, sophisticated. Yeah. It was like,
ours is so just like,
oh, crap, poop.
Yeah,
ours is jokes.
Penis joke.
bare bones human bare talk. Bones.
They're talking about, like, when you listen to Beyonce, you can really feel like, what? Yeah.
Like I said,
Giving Tree is about it's not.
First of all, Lewis, what's your reaction to the Giving Tree? Because you had some takes. I want to hear your take.
Wait, Lewis had a hot take.
He went off for a little bit. And
I had to pause the podcast and was like, Giving Tree? Were you like the Giving Tree? Well, yeah. Shout out to the Gina Dialogues. Great first episode. Love what I heard. Love to hear more. I think if I'm not mistaken, we are planning on more feature installments of the Gina Dialogues. The Giving Tree.
You can't have enough Ginas. You
know? No. Once a month of Gina is not enough. There has to be at least twice if I'm behaving, you know.
But when you get older,
twice a month is all you
You're
really
lucky
ask for.
To get once a year. It's annual without the U.
Jeez.
I'm like, wait a minute.
These are the sophisticated jokes.
Yeah, these are the jokes that the girls are missing out on. But at the same time,
that was damn sophisticated.
They're never getting to that level because we are too clever. But yeah, Giving Tree.
Oh, Giving Tree.
What's your issue? Why are you so angry?
I don't know why, but I never liked that book.
It's
don't know.
Like 10 pages long.
I know. And it's just so painful.
Half of it is pictures.
Not even. It's like 2/3 are pictures. But I guess I just got triggered because, yes, when my son was an infant, it was one of the first gifts we got. You read about it, or you read the reviews about the Giving Tree and how it's a classic and it's up there and it has to be. It's a must read for all parents. I read it, and for some reason, reading through the book, the 2 minutes it takes for you to read it, it infuriated me because I was just like, this kid is such a selfish jerk. I mean, I can't even do a loose review because it's such a quick read, but it's literally like a tree that gives and gives to this young man until, you know, the tree can literally give no more, until he's a literal stump. And the boy is just, you know, the boy becomes an old man by then. And the tree, all the tree can give is be a seat for him when he's older and he can't stand any longer. And part of me is like, I'm trying to dig in for like, where's the parable? Where is the moral lesson? And part of me still feels that maybe one of you guys, or maybe one of the genius can explain it better to me. I'm still struggling to find the moral of the story. I'm like,
Let's psychoanalyze this, and let's see.
It's been 20 years since college,
man. In your morality right now, considering the topic that we have today, the morality that we have. What's the moral that you can? What's the parable?
Okay, so through the course of the story, I mean, from what I understand, the tree is supposed to be maybe the parent figure, you know, some kind of adult or some kind of mentor who, you know, through the course of a child's life, you're supposed to give. You're supposed to give all you can. First it's shade, something really simple. Then it's apples, you know, part of you. And then later on, it's the branches so that they can build something. And then later on, it's your actual, it's the actual trunk of the tree, and so that the child can move on and move forward. And I think part of me, the moral of it is kind of nihilistic in a sense, like as parents, we're going to be left but a stump at the end of our child's life, or not the end of our child's life, but at the end of our story, quote unquote, we're going to be nothing but a stump for the child to sit on, reminisce maybe about the nice things, but you know, yeah, it was a tough look for me, because I was just like, okay, so when my children grow up and they move out or move on, I'll be left a stump. This is kind of like, it doesn't really encourage the hoorah, be good parents, because at the end they're just gonna come back and sit on you.
I think you got the whole parable right, dude.
Oh. Yay!
Because at least, I mean, think about it. And, you know, I love my parents, and I'm pretty sure you guys do too. But right. Now that we're older, and we try to say, oh, we're great people. How many times have there been where your parents have asked you to do something, and you're like, son of a...
Yeah,
like,
oh yeah.
And I mean, we're not as bad. We're not like sitting down on their heads or something like that, even though some of them have shrunk. But... At least that's the way I see it, and I don't know. Like I was, you know, we always talk about how I have my kid, and my thing is like I always tell my wife, like, well, enjoy it now because now they actually want to be with you.
I know.
in a couple of years,
Drop me off over here, Dad. I don't want to be seen with you. I'll walk the rest of the way to school, Mom. Thanks.
And I don't know, Sigmund Freud over here, I think it says, I think it's just a mirror that you don't like to see that the fact that that's you who's doing it. So,
I agree. And then maybe part of me feels too like maybe because it's a kid's book, I want it kind of handheld. I wanted the child who becomes an adult at the end to at least acknowledge, like give him a thank you, like, or give him something.
Exactly.
But like, no, literally, I'm going to sit on you. I'm like, Maybe back when the book was written, the symbolism was different or whatnot. But now, you know, I'm taking things at face value. I'm like, I'm going to sit on your dead.
No, so here we go. Here we go. Here's our new fanboy project. We're going to do a hipster version of the Giving Tree.
Jesus Christ.
and it's going to be called The Giving and Taking Tree.
No, it's just The Taking Tree. Like...
No, come on. The double entendre of giving anymore. And taking.
Yeah, that's true.
Again, on brand, remember?
We gotta keep it on brand. I know we're continuing our potpourri real quick. Lewis, you went to a concert recently?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a great...
I'm figuring, like, he has a lot of backlog. He hasn't been on for, like, a month.
I'm backed up. We should give him,
you know, some space here.
I appreciate it. Yeah, back up a little bit. Yeah, it's been a while.
Need Neuralax or something?
I just gotta relax my lower ball. What?
Your lower balls? Is that what you said? You got two sets? What's going on here, man?
It's like the alien from MIB.
His balls are his chin. Well, so yeah, thank you, Harold. I actually got to see Joe
Bolchinian, I think.
Yeah, he's from Glendale. Speaking of Glendale,
explains a lot. So speaking of Glendale, wait, well, that has nothing to do with that. But
I know.
The
concert was Glendale.
I know, it was Glendale adjacent. I guess we were in Inglewood. at the Forum, we got to see Jokoi live in a sold out show at what was the Great Western Forum. I actually looked it up when I was Googling the directions. I typed in Great Western Forum. I was like, wait, I don't think...
Yeah, Great Western doesn't exist anymore.
I was going to say, like, you're right, the bank doesn't exist anymore. It's just the Forum now. So yeah, a couple weeks ago...
It was named after the bank?
Yeah. The Great Western... And I thought that too as a kid, and I was like, how come it's not going to be the Chase? Because Great Western turned into whatever...
Whatever bank bought Chase, it. Yeah.
And then, yeah, but it's not.
Yeah, but so yeah, got to see Jokoi in concert. For those who don't know, you know, pretty famous comedian. He's been on a world tour. He's all right. He's a Filipino American. Some of his early material was a lot of making fun about the culture, not making fun, but you know, he's part of it. Being raised here, I think he's half Caucasian and Filipino. So a lot of his jokes were about that. But yeah, anyway, back to the show. Great Valentine's gift from my spouse. Shout out to you to her, for doing that. What do you call this? So yeah, it was actually really nice to get back to the Forum.
You're shaking your cheek in the table, man.
Oh, my bad. Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Lewis, we're going to interrupt your story here. Every time you put your elbows on the table, it goes jing. Oh.
It calls Harold.
Why do you think Harold kept on looking at you?
My bad.
Is my mom yelling at you?
That's right. You would know if you were wearing headphones.
I know, sorry. I can't hear anything. I'm sorry.
Well, if you get your own headphones.
I know. I'm telling you guys are just doing this for me now. So, yeah, it was a great
You said
great
you concert. Wanted hand-holding, so this is
me.
This is actually the hand-holding podcast for Lewis.
It's been a while. It's been a while. So, yeah, anyway, great being at the concert. Forum, first off, it's been decades since I've been to the Forum. I think the last game... Or the last time I was there was when the Lakers were still playing there with, like, you know, the Anthony Peeler, Vlade Divac crew. So it's been a while. I forget.
The heyday of the Lakers.
Yeah. The heyday, the post-Magic, pre-Kobe and Shaq years. So those are like, you know, that was fun. So I forget how small the venue was because I've been to the Staples like once or twice ever since then. And I take for granted how huge the Staples Center is. But in the Forum, still a great venue. Kudos to Jokoi for selling out another show. Like I said, he went on a world tour recently. And I guess this is the end of his tour. You know, it was a really nice, great show. Fluffy, I can't remember his name now, but Fluffy opened for him. Gabriel Iglesias. The night before was Tiffany Haddish. So he's got like some pretty, you know, A-list folks doing opening for him. Not to mention for the closing act, he actually got Wanya Morris from Boyz II Men to come out and do a little 90s, you know, montage and then made all us old folks feel a little good inside.
Just so, one guy?
Just one guy? No, it was kind of a tease.
So
it
just said boy...
Yeah, boy and men and men. But so yeah, it was a great show. Definitely recommend seeing him if you get a chance. I think I'm not sure if he's going on tour anymore. I think, like I said, this is the end of this, you know, world tour. He might do some smaller shows, but yeah, highly recommend it. I mean, I just love going to comedy shows. Excuse me. It's not something I do often, but you know, when I do go, it's like it's just great to just lay back, have a drink in your hand. You know, it's a craft. Like comedy is hard. Obviously, because I can't do it.
Obviously.
So, you know, it's kudos to these comedians who can do it in front of hundreds and thousands or even dozens on smaller venues and, you know, do their thing and make people laugh, make people feel good. So, yeah, definitely recommended.
Was the crowd mostly Filipino?
You know what? I would actually say, yeah, mostly Filipino, but barely. It felt like maybe 2/3 of the crowd was Filipino. The other 1/3 was like, you know, people married to Filipino nurses. Just kidding. But actually, no, like behind, you know, there's a lot of jokes about Hispanic folks and Black folks and whatnot. So, yeah, it was a pretty diverse crowd. So I'll give them that.
And I don't think we've ever actually talked about this. You know, Jokoi has become such a popular figure, and we always talk about, you know, representing, you know, Filipino-Americans.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
We're Filipino-Americans. You know, in your opinion, how, you know, what kind of a comedian is he? I mean, I know he's popular. I know he's gaining, you know, stardom over there. But in your opinion, what's your opinion of Jokoi?
Talking about me?
Both of you.
You know what? I'm half and half on him, because I met the guy a couple of times because he's from the Valley.
Yeah, he's done a few shows at our school, right? At CSUN years ago. Was that correct?
Yeah, but also like he runs in a crowd. Like his buddies are people that I know.
So oh, really?
I've hung out with him a couple of times. So it's like at first, like the first time I was like, oh, this is the guy. He's like a comedian. And then I was like, oh, I've seen some of his stuff on like, you know, not YouTube. This was like before YouTube, but it was like some of the late night TV shows. And like at first I was like, okay, he's a good comedian, but he's not great yet. You know, obviously he has good material to work with. And for us, it's familiar because he does the whole Filipino accent thing. And that's, I don't know why, but it's always going to be semi-funny to me just because we grew up with that. Or, I mean, I half grew up with it because my dad, for some reason, doesn't have a Filipino accent. But
yeah, I honestly don't know what your dad's accent is.
No, remember,
Guamanian?
No, it could be Chamorro. Son. But I think Ivy put it best one time, like 20 years ago. She goes, "Oh, I didn't know your dad was from the South," and I was like, "He is?" I was like, "Well, he lived in the South for like a number of years." She goes, "Yeah, it's like he sounds like Foghorn Leghorn," and I was like, "Dude, this messed up."
I can see that actually, right?
And he's built like him too, so it's kind of strange.
I say,
and he calls Harold. His kids, "Asa son." I still think my dad doesn't know my name. but
oh, the Giving Tree. Yeah, see,
you do realize that every so often I see your dad, he goes, "Where's my son?" Like, I don't know why he sounded Hindu at that point. But he always
takes your wife's accent.
You're right. He never says your name. "Where's my son? How's my son?"
Exactly. But yeah, it's like, I mean, I appreciate his, I appreciate him straying away from strictly staying Filipino American comedy. Just because if you want to, you know, pigeonhole yourself into that thing, then you're kind of stuck with it. But if you're able to expand and get a wider audience, and you know, you get the blow up that apparently, not apparently, but that he obviously has, because he sold out two shows at the Forum, and that's like ridiculous.
It's not Kevin Hart, you know, status.
Yeah, but at least his jokes are funny.
I saw Harold's brow go like, "Brr." Yeah, because you know, when he said Kevin Hart.
No, Kevin,
quick. Aladdin. Kevin Hart. Aladdin.
Are you saying Hart. Kevin Hart's the next genie?
I mean, he does fit in a lamp.
Because I would protest
without any magic.
That's literally just kidding. That's the most protest item I'll ever have is him starring in a movie that I'd actually like.
Ooh, Kevin Hart and Back to the Future.
Can we talk about that real quick?
One thing that I have to tell you, like I got before we ended this whole thing, I think I have to watch his newer stuff. I watched the latest Netflix thing. I'm like Harold. I'm half and half. I think he's still trying to find his way with his like his more mainstream comedy.
Yeah.
I think his bread and butter really still is the Filipino. Jokes thing. I've been hearing reviews basically saying that, or maybe it was you who reviewed it, that you know, he's kind of straying away from the whole mom, the mom thing. It's not as
prominent
anymore. But the one thing that it's always bothered me when Filipino comedians do jokes about their like parents and everything, mm-hmm. and I'm like, do they really sound like that? Have you ever heard anybody actually go, "Oh, Joseph"?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe the parents I have is just eloquent.
And you got the Manila parents. Obviously not parents from the South.
What are you talking about? Your dad is like, "I say, gentlemen, where's my son?
Where's my lechon? I could go for some sweet tea right now.
And some lechon."
Oh, real quick, before we get to you. We all went to CSUN, of course. There was a gentleman there that at least in my career at CSUN, at least five times I met. It was this old, I'd say in his like 60s, a Caucasian man.
Shane?
No. But like full on like Santa Claus beard.
Oh, I've seen that guy.
But then he talked to me, oh, kumusta na, pare? I'm like, oh, crap, really? And it turns out that this guy lived in the Philippines for like 10 years.
Oh, I remember that guy.
And so he learned how to speak
Tagalog. Wow, okay.
And so every time he says, oh, pare, kumusta na? We talk in Tagalog and I'm like, this is the weirdest thing in the whole wide world, but awesome.
That guy just shamed me. I got sunned by Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was the thing. That's how we started.
You're shamed by Santa Claus, right?
Okay, what were you going to say, Harold? Sorry.
I don't know. Lewis is talking
about... real quick, I guess I just my quick review of Jokoy's bits. I'm a fan.
Jokoy's bits.
He's stealing all his bits right now.
I love his bits. So yeah, I mean, like Harold's saying, like I think Jokoy has been evolving his jokes. You're right. I think it comes at the price of becoming more mainstream. Like he has been... You know, he was a guest co-host for the Chelsea Handler show, I believe it was, until it was canceled. He's got a couple of Netflix specials. And like you said, in the last show, at least, it's weird because he's kind of like moved on from making fun of his mom. He'll still throw in like, you know, sprinkle a couple of fob accent jokes. But most of his jokes, or at least I want to say at least a third of his jokes were making fun of his son. Not in a bad way, but yeah, I can kind of see it. It's kind of a bad way. But it's a lot about parenting in the modern age. So I guess that's kind of how he's trying to bridge the gap from like his old stuff to his new stuff and something that's a little bit more universal. Not to mention there was a good amount of stuff that was pretty raunchy, especially for, I mean, again, like we're raised Catholic, conservative-ish Filipino household. So hearing this stuff coming from a Filipino comedian was kind of different, kind of new, kind of welcome, I want to say, because it's definitely not like your PG, kids section of Netflix kind of jokes and stuff. Funny story, but one of...
He was humping a table at one of the Netflix specials.
Exactly. So, you know, funny story is we went with some friends from my wife's coworkers. My friend brought, or her friend brought her parents. And I had one of those like, ooh, like hot under the collar moments when he was doing those like... jokes about masturbation and sex and stuff like that. Wait, and the parents are like,
you were
right
hot there. Under the collar.
Yes, yes, that was.
Okay, just check it out.
So, yes, and he did do the whole humping the chair gag again. And I felt awkward for my wife's friend. I was like, that's going to be a nice long drive home. So, anyway, so yeah, I mean, yeah, give it a chance if you want. I mean, it's on Netflix. If you're already paying the $9.99 for the monthly subscription, check out his skits, see if it's for you. So yeah, that's all.
Okay. You know, that's the longest potpourri we've had in a while. Yeah. Obviously, Lewis needed to get it out of his system.
I'm sorry. It's been a while. It's been okay. Now I need a towel. Sorry. Comedy's hard. Shut up.
Ew. I'm weirded out that, like, even though... we have a much bigger table now. Lewis is way closer to me.
I know. He scooted over you, which is kind of weird. You know, which is causing you to like turn your head.
I'd move, but then like the whole table, knowing my luck, it would like knock down the whole setup right now. I noticed that right now too. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
It's fine.
It's also because you're wearing joggers and I'm in shorts. So it's like, I mean, calf action. There's a lot of calf action going on underneath this table right now.
Wow. Okay. So speaking of calves... Golden calf.
Blasphemous.
So, I know, very blasphemous. That's what we're going to do today. We are going to be throwing out some blasphemy. You know, for those people who don't know, we are Filipino, therefore we are Catholic.
It's a one-to-one thing.
Unless you're from like the Mindanao area.
Unless you're like the south.
The southern region, there's a lot of Muslims.
Wait, your dad is from the south? I never said which south.
The deep south.
Wait, are you saying Foghorn Leghorn is from Mindanao?
Yes.
I say. That's why he's looking for his lechon, dude. Wait, they're Muslims. Never mind. So that's not racist. Just, you know, if you know you're a Filipino history. So today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about something blasphemous. For those Filipinos or for those Catholics, you know, it is the time of year where, you know, fish fillets all of a sudden become popular.
Cheaper for some reason.
And I've always thought it would be the opposite, where they would charge more. you know, this is the time where people actually start going to church again because of how guilty they are. It is the wonderful season of Lent.
He said the wonderful world of Lent.
Wonderful world of Lent.
That was a ride at Disney. They had to, it was only open 40 days a year.
Just so you know, just so that we can like absolve all of our feelings and emotions right now, at the end of this whole thing, I'm going to ask you what you guys are
giving up for Lent.
Jeez, dude. But no, our topic for today, you know, we were thinking about what fits better, you know, what is the most, what is one thing that we can talk about? And we thought about, let's talk about religion. But since we're not really that great, we talking about religion in general, we thought, you know, we would bring in pop culture. And there's one movie in particular that really has to do with the Catholic faith, you know. So today we're going to be talking about the greatest comedy, it's called The Passion.
Yep.
I'm joking. It's
pretty
joking,
hilarious.
I'm joking. That was...
My mom's ear just like, huh? No. Why would you say that?
Joseph?
Denise?
I'm joking, no. We're going to be talking about a film by Kevin Smith. You know, it's weird. We really don't talk about Kevin Smith too much, aside from stalking him twice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Following him to his car after that live podcast show. But besides that... Thanks for not putting that restraining order.
But, you know, Kevin Smith has had a lot of successful and not so successful movies. But, you know, one of my favorite movies and the one we kind of like started suggesting and kind of agreed upon is watching a movie and or doing a retro review for the movie Dogma.
Yeah. So Dogma came out 1999. So last year celebrated the 20th anniversary of this great, but super controversial comedy from Kevin Smith.
Then and now.
I'm sorry, yeah, 20 years later, it still triggers a lot of emotions from, you know, depending on the people that you ask about. But, you know, this is another one of the movies in Kevin Smith's View Askew Universe series of movies. One of his, you know, critically, I think it's actually pretty well received. But again, like I said, super controversial because... you know, any movie that even dares make fun of religion or faith is bound to get a lot of pushback, especially back then. So let's talk Dogma 20 years later, to celebrate Lent.
You know what I need, right?
Yeah. I know you want it.
I want it, Lewis.
You have to say it out loud. You have to ask for it.
Lewis.
Yes.
Give me Lewis reviews.
Burr, burr, burr. Burr, burr, burr. Yeah. Oh my God. It's been so long.
So long.
Lose reviews for Dogma. 20 years.
There's
spoilers.
There's a bead of sweat coming down. Because he knew
like
it was coming.
Cold sweat around my mustache where it would be. All right, so let's do a quick lose reviews for the movie Dogma by Kevin Smith. So the movie starts with two fallen angels, Bartleby and Loki, played by, of all people, we got to talk about this casting later, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. At their baby face best. They find out that...
Damon was so skinny, dude.
Dude, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy seeing... Okay, we'll go into that later. But, you know, Bartleby and Loki find out through a secret letter that a church is reopening after a centennial or 100-year anniversary. Long story short, these angels have been expunged or expelled from heaven, and they have been stuck in Wisconsin since time immemorial.
Worse than hell, according to Metronauter.
I don't know if Aaron Rodgers agrees with that, but... You know, whatever. We're not cheeseheads. We're not going to discriminate. So they've been expelled to Wisconsin for decades, centuries. And they found a loophole, which I will ask Dennis later if he can clarify how that works. But a loophole where they need to walk through the archway of a reopening church in New Jersey. However, here's the problem. If they were to walk through that archway, get themselves back to heaven. The rules or the metaphysics of religion and dogma basically dictate that since God was wrong and infallible, that would mean the end of existence as they knew it. So in order to stop that, we are introduced to Metatron, who is the voice of God played by the awesome Alan Rickman.
Again, amazing
casting. Amazing casting. Who speaks to the last scion. I had to look up what that word meant.
It's a car.
Yeah.
It's a discontinued Toyota.
It's a reasonably priced Didn't you own one?
Yes, I actually still do. Oh, no, my wife owns her car, yeah.
Did you look, when you looked it up, or were you like looking up? Yeah.
Or? No, I was driving a holy car. So the Metatron finds.
Did you get it blessed?
Yeah.
Kind of like the golf clubs.
I thought every Filipino get their cars blessed, right? Unless it's a lease, then it's just like, you know, whatever. Slap in the back, get out of here. You got to own it. Metatron finds the last sign of Christ, played by Linda Fiorentino. Help me out, Harold.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Did you say with your accent?
Fiorentino.
Linda Fiorentino. Hey.
So she played, her character's name is Bethany. She is a divorced, caregiver, or no? She works at a abortion clinic. So that's caregiver. Like, wow. Metatron tells basically tasks Bethany to stop these angels from walking through the cross or through the archway. But he did tell her that she would be assisted by two prophets. And of course, since this is a Kevin Smith movie, the two prophets are Jay and Silent Bob. They throughout their little trip from. Where was she? I'm sorry. To New Jersey, to where the church is. They meet more characters. We meet Rufus, the 13th apostle, played by Chris Rock. Jeez. Serendipity, the muse, played by Selma Hayek. Again. Come on.
Jesus. Sorry. Jesus in a dogma thing.
And we finally also, you know, we're jumping around the plot here, but we find out who got the plot started and who even told Bartleby and Loki about the loophole is Jason Lee, who plays Azrael, another fallen angel who is also trying to get out of hell. Actual hell, not
one
Wisconsin.
One of the most famous U.S. universe people who actually like made it mainstream.
Yeah, Jason Lee, who's, if you've heard, obviously the voice of Incredibles, My Name is Earl.
He was great in a dragon.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, the Bruce Lee story.
I hate you. Wrong Jason Lee, man. So we fast forward a little bit.
Crow. Hold on.
At the end. At the end, like any feel good story about religion and God, our heroes are able to stop Bartleby and Loki with a little, you know, last second. Intervention by God herself.
Yes.
Played by Alanis Morissette.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, sure.
She had one hand in her pocket.
It was filmed in 98, so Morissette is just right on brand. That's the end of the story. That is Lose Views for Dogma 1999.
Brr, brr, brr.
Thank you.
Pretty good. Let's start off with this cast of characters. We've been talking about it. How in the hell...
It doesn't make sense. Like I watching it in 99, it was just like, oh, okay, it's a movie, so you're kind of like you're jaded, not jaded, but you're kind of whatever with casting. And looking back, heavy hitters.
Yeah.
And
it's like,
no, first and foremost, one of the very first characters aside that's non like US universe characters, you guys, George Carlin.
Oh yeah, off the bat.
But then that started his entry into the VSQ universe, because he ended up subsequently being in more than, you know, just that. So good for him.
And then after that, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you got Oscar winners, people selling out, Chris Rock, who sold out numerous comedy
Chris Rock concerts. Coming off of Bigger and Blacker and forgot his the one before that, but was he? Oh, here, Bring the Pain. The two of my favorite stand-up specials ever. And he's doing...
Yeah, he's Kevin a bit... Smith. Yeah. he's butt naked on a freeway in a Kevin Smith movie.
The fact that Alan Rickman... I mean, technically he doesn't show anything, but he pulls his pants down.
Yeah.
Sir Alan Rickman... I mean...
Sir Alan Rickman.
You have Matt Damon, one of the... And then... Ben Affleck.
So, like, the whole Affleck isn't obvious because he'd always been, you know, big supporter since Mallrats. And Kevin Smith was, you know, one of the producers of Good Will Hunting. So he's one of the funders of Good Will Hunting. So he's always had a good relationship with them. So literally this movie comes after those two guys win Oscars for Good Will
Hunting. That's nuts to me. That's crazy to me.
And it's like... Oh, yeah. Oscar winners Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are playing the villains in this movie. And they're having such a good time.
You know, that's tell. I think you can tell.
You can tell that they're having fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a lot of, it feels like a lot of the acting was like, not ad-lib per se, but maybe Kevin Smith just gave him like, here's the rough outline, have fun. Or especially that scene where he's like, they're interrogating the boardroom of...
My favorite things.
Yeah, it's like they're the two of them just like riffing and making fun and having fun with the rest of the people in that room. It's great acting. It's crazy to me. Crazy to me.
He said, fillate the mic, is what he's saying.
Speaking of George Carlin.
So for the people who can't see it because this is a audio podcast, Lewis was just filleting.
He's just filleting
the mic.
He's just doing a filleto fish because it's Lent.
So let's move on. What did you grade this? Like, what did you think compared to other Viewers Universe movies? Compared to other comedies, I guess, where would you fit this under?
It's weird because it is a Kevin Smith movie, but it's not a Kevin Smith movie. Like, the dialogue is obviously Kevin Smith styled, but the rest of the movie is, like, you know, Kevin Smith movies, their structures are very, very loose. There's no real tight story. It's just, okay, this is kind of the plot, and however things are going to work around it, we're just going to have great dialogue around it. That's how I've always felt about a lot of his movies. This one, there's actual circumstances and sequences that need to be led up to finally get to the ending of the film. And it isn't even the religious slant on it. It's just happens to be something that was part of the film, or it is a big idea of the film. For me, you know, someone who went to Catholic school for 12 years, you know, whose parents are, I mean, like I made the joke a couple of days ago. At Ash Wednesday, my dad was the guy, though he spoke more than the priest, and I got my ashes from my mom. So, like, my family's deeply ingrained in the church. And when this movie originally came out, my mom was just like, oh, have you heard about this movie that's supposedly making fun of Catholicism? And then I was like, have you seen it? And she's like, no, but I just heard about it. And that's really the biggest thing, is like, no one ever looked at the actual content. Because if they do, it's silly. It's a comedy, and it's a comedy sort of action film, and it's a road trip. And people were more about stirring up the controversy than actually finding out what the content was really about. And that's kind of the thing.
Well, it's funny. One of the main people that was going against Kevin Smith's the Dogma movie. At a certain point, actually, I think a month or two after the film was released, after the controversy, after all the protests and everything, Kevin Smith actually wrote or said that one of the main like members, a priest from that organization, actually contacted him and said, "Hey, could we have a copy of the movie so we can have a dialogue about it?" And wow. Kevin Smith's response was, "You haven't watched it yet." So how can you be making these? How can you be protesting?
Yeah.
And you know, for me, I have to tell you, I'm deeply Catholic. I know I joke around a lot about these things, but my background is has a lot to do with theology also. But I have to tell you, I love this movie. And even though I can see where the controversy lies under. Or lies in there. There's a line, you know, especially I think it was Rufus that was talking about, the 13th apostle, you know, who was basically talking about, or was it some Hayek's character, I forget, Serendipity. But the idea that, you know, the biggest fault that we have is we've taken this notion of God, we've taken this notion of Jesus, and we've taken it and made it something mortal. And so that we can't question anymore, that we can't say anything wrong anymore. And I think that was the beauty of it because, you know, one of my favorite scenes was from the very beginning was where Loki, Matt Damon, was talking to the nun. And I remember people were complaining about, I can't believe they would do something. You know, why would a nun, you know, turn away from her religion after just one conversation? But it's like, if you listen to the actual conversation that he was having with Loki, it actually made perfect sense. And, you know, even just that one thing kind of showed me, he was talking about, Loki was talking about how he likes effing with the clergy. And that's the thing. That's the problem with clergy. That's the problem with people who have absolute faith, is that they can't question anything. Not that I think that anything's wrong with it. You know, not that I agree with everything with what Dogma was talking about. But the fact that you can't say, you know, like one of the things they kept on talking about is God a he? Is God a she?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like everybody says, well, of course God is a he. Well, no, God is God.
Yeah.
The fact that you put him into a category of a male or a female means all of a sudden you're kind of like limiting God, and therefore you don't know who God is anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
like you just said, you mortalize him by just him. Sorry to say.
Yeah, because you're automatically thinking of the guy with a big white beard.
Mm-hmm.
Santa Claus.
Who speaks Tagalog at season? Oh my gosh. Is that him?
Did Jesus like make fun of you? Is that what you're saying?
The Jesus made fun of me? Yeah. It's like the thing that I always found interesting about this movie is I like the movie. I like it as a story and whatnot, but it's not, to me, it's not as funny, obviously, because it's hard to do. To keep a good balance of like a good story and a comedy sometimes, but it's not his funniest work. And it was coming out of a time where I loved Chasing Amy. So he follows Chasing Amy with Dogma. Complete 180.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I get what he was going for. I think sometimes, for me at least, the cast might be a little too jumbled. There's a lot going on. So the very first time I saw it, I was confused kind of by the whole thing, just because there's so many characters going on that it really wasn't conducive to me understanding the plot of the story, which is fine because, you know, stuff like that happens.
You're like 12 or something, right?
18.
Oh, okay. Close.
Well, my brain was
still like mentally.
I mean, right now I'm still like the brain of a 15-year-old, so...
Mazel tov.
That's right. But, my brain can have his bar mitzvah.
So, yeah, I totally agree with what you guys are talking about. Actually, I want to kind of harp on what Harold was saying about how, yeah, at the time when it first came out, I think I actually saw this. I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it. It came out in 99. That was the year I started college, so I started hanging out with you guys. I think it was actually our mutual friend Mooney who introduced the movie, or one of you guys introduced the movie to me. We watched it on, you know, that archaic system called DVDs. At the time, I was like still stuck on obviously college humor, so I'm stuck on like Buddy Christ and Christian or Catholicism. Wow, and it's like that's hilarious. So I'm actually glad that we got you asked us to rewatch it 20 years later, and it's yeah, a lot of the messages, a lot of the moral of the story was lost to me at the time. It's like, and watching it recently, I was like, oh, Kevin Smith actually had something to say. Like, I get it. To talk in nerd terms, it almost feels like this movie was a fanfic of his, like something that would probably find on a Reddit thread or somebody's or wherever it is that they post fanfics nowadays. But this is like somebody's mytho fanfic about Catholicism and what if this and that, and this is how it's gonna happen. So like I get how back then in 99 a lot of people would have been up in arms at it. I actually did a quick internet search. Apparently this movie was delayed a whole year because it was supposed to come out 98, but because of all the controversy and all the protests, the Miramax had to hold off on showing it until Kevin Smith found an actual distributor who, I don't know if you want to talk about it, turns out to be Harvey Weinstein. So they got to distribute it a year later, 99. And ironically, fast forward 20 years later, we can't get it on anywhere streaming because it is tied up in Weinstein's nasty businesses and stuff like that. So I think everything's on hold for that. So unfortunately, one of Kevin Smith's most, you know, talked about, most controversial films can't be seen streaming. And, you know, a lot of kids can't see it unless you, you know, want to find one of them video stores and find an old plastic copy of it.
They can rent my copy.
I said, there you go.
Well, it's
come to North Hills for a viewing.
It's funny you're talking about how you know, the morals and everything, and I think that's where that's where I kind of veer away. Like it, I don't. After watching it again, I watched it many times. After watching it again, I came to the realization it's not really a comedy. It's it's a story that has comedic parts to it.
Yes,
it has the Kevin Smith style. But I think it's almost like Kevin Smith had a very serious movie, or had like something to say.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys know this, but supposedly the script of Dogma actually came before Clerks.
Yeah.
I read about that somewhere. So, yeah.
But
yeah.
He chose, whether it's because of technology, that's what he was saying, or budget, he chose not to do it. But you can see that this was something personal. There's a lot of messages that was going in and out. And because Kevin Smith is Kevin Smith, I almost felt like, oh, quick, you know, we need to have some moment of levity. Let's put a poop monster.
Yeah.
You know, we need a, you know, we need
that's
some.
Still, honestly, that's probably, that's the worst moment of the movie.
Because quality wise and just
cool, yeah, it's okay. Like right now, technology wise, that thing looks like poop emojis look more realistic.
Like, he could have done puppets that would look better.
Yeah, because it was bad. Like, you know, like it was literally Scorpion King bad.
Yes,
and it
actually no, I think this was worse than Scorpion King.
Yeah, this is like a Mighty Morphin Power Ranger bad guy, and like
that would have been better.
It's still better. Yeah.
Like any of those guys in, like Dennis said, in a giant costume, I would have been way more impressed. But then it was like,
a little dark, but I did appreciate that they gave it some kind of canon background, that it was a living embodiment of all the sins or the excrements of all the people that, crucified and killed on that mountain came to life because of all the evil inside. I'm like, okay, this sounds like some DC Marvel stuff, but all right.
And you can see there that Kevin Smith, being a Catholic, and still is a Catholic.
Like, thought about it.
You know, actually, in the end credits, he actually talks about how that he's a proud Catholic, that he's bringing in a Catholic into the world. Surprise, surprise. Oh, Harley.
Yeah.
So you could see the connection there, just because it's something as small or as simple as Golgotha. But I agree, like that. Aside from it being bad, what was the payoff of that whole thing?
Salma Hayek in a strip club.
Yes. But, we could have just gone there and then moved on. But
yeah, there's no consequences in that.
Which, by the way, I had to rewatch it for scientific reasons. Even though you...
I watched that scene and for some reason From Dusk Till Dawn back to back. I don't know what was in From Dusk Till Dawn that I would want to watch.
I don't know. Over George and over Clooney. Again. George Clooney.
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, man.
Such a great actor.
Never watched.
Damn you, Salma Hayek. You ruined my childhood.
Telling you, dude. Kevin Smith got her and Linda Fiorentino after she did Men in Black.
Yeah.
That's pretty big take.
Oh, crap. That is
that
her.
That was her. Yeah. Very good. You know, Harold, what do you call that phenomenon when you think somebody's in something, but it's
Mandela
not,
effect?
Thank you, Mandela. Because I thought she was in ER for the longest time, but she's not. There's another lady
Linda
on
Ferentino.
Whoa.
Linda Cardellini was in ER.
Linda Cardellini is also Mrs. Hawkeye, right?
No. Yes.
Okay, yeah. So she wasn't in ER. She's a totally different actress.
She just looks like she was would be someone who's in ER.
Yes.
What is this effect called?
The Mandela effect.
Do we know the origin of it?
Yeah, Nelson Mandela. Just kidding.
No. Oh, is it because
no, Mandela is that whole the what do you call it?
It's the image where it's like all these like shapes and everything.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mandela.
Yeah.
Okay.
I keep saying Mandela because it's funny.
No, because if it's the Mandela effect, it's hilarious that people confuse Nelson Mandela
Mandela.
And it's the same
Mandela
thing. It's two people.
This is very meta. This is very meta right now. Just layers, man. Yeah, layers.
Let's go with, you know, now that we kind of talked about what we thought of the movie, let's go with favorite moments, things that you actually really appreciated, whether it's comedy, whether it's, you know, conversation. What is it that you really liked? My personal favorite one is every single time Loki was there, every single time mm-hmm. Matt Damon was there, whether it's him in doing the onion like that onion voodoo doll thing where he like he's squishing.
Oh yeah, he smashed it. Yeah,
and then he squishes and he leaves.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden he's like, oh yeah, forgot something, and he starts killing everybody. That always gets to me because you can see like the smile on his face as he's doing this. It's like. I'm an Oscar Award winner.
Yeah, I can do anything.
My favorite line is it's going to be so crappy, but it's because it's a great reference, is no ticket.
Oh, his only line of dialogue.
But because it's coming from one of my favorite movies of all time, and he actually gets the crappy jazz getting thrown out by Uncle Phil moment, and... You know, anytime you reference The Last Crusade, you're fine by me. So.
I'm going to get a little sentimental, but I think one of my favorite lines, again, going back to how there's like hidden messages, and, you know, Kevin Smith's strength as a writer and as a director, I think, are his talkie parts. So I think one of my favorite moments had to be when Alan Rickman was talking to Bethany. She was having a moment when I think it was after the whole train debacle and everything, and she realizes how heavy it is and how she's actually, because I think at the first half of her little journey, she was like on the fence of like, are there really angels that I have to stop and all that stuff. Anyway, long story short, you know, she's Bethany's on at a lake or some body of water. Metatron, played by Alan Rickman, comes up to her and they're having a little heart to heart. And, you know, it's weirdly, again, it is Kevin Smith fanfic, because Metatron is, in this movie, the voice of God, because allegedly, or according to them, if you actually heard God's voice, your head would explode, your body would liquefy, blah, blah, blah. So they explained that Metatron was actually the one who spoke to the child Jesus, a 12-year-old, and told him, and told this kid that he was, you know, God's son, and he was to save the world, and his whole thing. And he, you know, Rickman, the whole dialogue was basically, he tells the story that Jesus couldn't take it. Like, he had the same moment that Bethany had of denial and anger and all that stuff. And Rickman said something like, I wish I could take it all back. Like, you can feel the guilt of... I think that's what made this movie so impactful for me, is that, like, yeah, even these angels are infallible. You know, Metatron, in a very ironically humane moment, felt bad that he had to be the bearer of news to Jesus and say that you have to die. You will die for the sins of these people that you don't know, and they will hate you, but you have to do it because you're God's son. And it was very powerful. You know, kudos again to Rickman, Alan Rickman, you know, help me out here. At this point, he's only done Die Hard and maybe some. And I know he's a classically trained Shakespearean actor.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
What a resume. What a resume. Obviously, this is way before the Harry Potter movies.
Why a spoon, brother?
How dare you? Only Die Hard?
Only Die Hard, that little movie.
Galaxy Quest?
Was it
99?
That's his back-to-back movies.
Oh, I know. That's
and Dogma.
That's MVP Galaxy movies.
Two of my favorite movies ever.
That's an MVP season right there. But so yeah, kudos to Rickman for pulling off like a line that could have been like a throwaway, but you know, they acted the poo out of that scene. So very powerful, very effective. So you know, yeah, one of my favorites.
It's still just a prominent figure will always be the Buddy Christ figure.
Yeah, like you still see it at Comic Cons. Yeah,
no, but I went to.
I have a Buddy Christ.
I used to have a Buddy Christ figure, then I lost him. So I lost Jesus, but I gotta find him again.
That's the purpose of the movie.
It's finding new faith.
Finding Jesus.
But like, so I went to a church, and there was a very similar statue there.
No way.
Like, it was a happy Jesus, and I was like, oh my God. But I was like, there's a Buddy Christ here. And my mom was like, who's a Buddy Christ? And I was just like, no, he's giving us a thumbs up. She's like, oh, he is. And he's smiling. And I was like, you always see, you know, like I talked about the whole religious thing. You always see the figure of Christ anytime that they portray him as welcoming and as like in thought or in prayer. You never see him.
Or as George Carlin says, as giving us the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah. But you never see Christ. This is, and I'm trying to get too religious over here, but you never see Jesus portrayed as unless it's like a comedy bit where you have, you know, something. But you never see him smiling and, like, you know, hanging out, being like a dude.
Yeah. Being with the homies.
Yeah. You never, it's always like that whole separation, like the separation of him as a religious figure is obviously keeping him as a deity. So he has to put himself at above our level. But at the same time, if he is both God and man, we should, then, like, him at the Last Supper is like, literally like, yo, I'm in the middle. I guess I'm paying for the whole bill here. So I'm not going to even smile. Like, and which one of you guys is going to betray me? That guy? Is it this guy right here?
You've been that guy.
I've been to the church for way too long.
Well, one of my favorite parts, and unfortunately I don't know the quote of it, but Rufus is asked, you know, what's he like? You know?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
He talks, and one of my favorite things that Rufus talks about is that, you know, Jesus, one of the things that Jesus likes doing, favorite things doing, is just listening to everybody joke around. That's the Jesus that I would have loved.
That's my Jesus.
You know, like, just the Jesus where after he walked on water, after he did all his miracles. You know, it's kind of like the Star Trek, where, you know, it's always that action. And then after the action, there's that, you know, days of, okay, we're just looking at stars now. But that's what would have been interesting. What was Jesus like with his friends? You know, I would like to think that Jesus, if he had a podcast, he would be doing the same exact thing.
I like to picture Jesus.
It would be a call-in podcast. Like, talk to Jesus.
Yeah, just like Jesus and Friends on South Park.
Ooh, hey, that's a new podcast idea.
We're going to pretend we're Jesus? I do not condone that at all, sir. I'd like to walk out of here, the studio, without getting lightning shucked in me.
We're pretty protected.
I don't know, man. Jesus got range, bro. Sniping in the corner.
Wait, are you saying Jesus is a camper?
Oh, yeah. If Jesus was playing FPS, total camper. Because he has all the powers. He can just lay back and, like, do everything.
Like, where is he? He's on the lake.
That's what he sends the apostles out for.
Oh, that's cheat code. He's in the body of water. Lame.
We can't get to him. How dare you?
I'd say he'd be support. I mean, come on. Give him some.
He's healing.
He's the tank. Healer.
Exactly.
He's the tank. And the healer.
Oh, he's
and
totally
a camper,
OP.
All of this,
yeah, he sounds totally so OP now to think of it. You're right. He is, be a tank healer.
And he's what the
DPS do
in Call of Duty, we call a juggernaut where you can't stop him. That's right. We've gone from Jesus the man to Jesus the FPS player.
It's on brand.
Yeah. That's how much we respect the Jesus.
The Jesus.
Also a great bowler. Lebowski.
So,
Lord.
There's an event every single year. I always call it Relicon.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And so for those people who don't know what Relicon is, it's basically a religious convention where I argue that it's pretty much the same thing. It's the San Diego Comic-Con of Catholicism.
Okay, I was going to ask if it's just Catholicism and not it's strictly Catholicism, yeah, not even strictly, Christianity.
Yeah,
they're welcome, but it's a
just like regular Catholic church.
Exactly,
they're welcome. We look at you. We know.
We look at you sideways.
But it is a Catholic convention. And I always argue that it is pretty much San Diego Comic-Con. Why? Because, well, what are some of the mainstays of a comic book convention?
Fat guys?
Panels.
Okay, you have panels. You have panels every, like, same schedules over and over again. There's panels. What else do we have there?
Celebrities.
We do have celebrities.
Speakers, I mean.
We have speakers. We have there. We do have fat guys. We have people that...
we have neck beards.
There's a lot of neck beards.
Is there a lot of holy water funk?
There's a lot of funk.
Yes, are there cosplayers?
Well, if you think, this is what I talked about. So aside from,
you want to go as Buddha one day? Too.
You know, one of the convention things that I love is, like at San Diego, when I could still afford going there, was going through the like one of the halls where you have all the vendors and everything. And that's why I was joking around with Lewis and Harold before, is that I always take a picture. Oh, cool! They're selling their cosplay, but it's people selling like albs, robes, and all these things.
Their cosplay.
And so, I mean, technically, yes. And what's the other thing that is important in a convention? Merch.
Yep.
Swag. There's always merch. There's merch in there too.
A lot of rosaries.
One of my favorite merch is Jesus Christ action figure. Okay, and I kid you not, this is all for real. This is in somewhere, and the beauty of this is that you can pull him back, and then and it's called the Walking on Water Jesus.
Oh my dang.
And so, you know,
is he on a hoverboard? Is that what's going on?
No, it's just him going like the usual, like his finger is up like this, but he just like scoots forward, you know, but, and kind of to wrap things up, we were just talking about the idea of dogma and how dogma was such a controversial thing where Kevin Smith clearly has, and I could be mistaken, Kevin Smith clearly had the Catholic roots and the belief to back it up. Where you have a convention like this, in some ways, also kind of does controversial stuff, you know. Like, you know, aside from the merch, what else do we have at conventions? We have T-shirts, you know. We have, but yeah, we have all these like anime figures, and you know, of like the last I was there just recently, and the one I wanted to buy, but they didn't have my size, because it was like all kid size. Was an anime version of the Apostles. And I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest idea.
I want that.
Exactly.
Is it like chibi?
Hold on.
It was chibi Jesus and Friends, dude. I was like, my God.
It's like Tiny Titans or Teen Titans.
Exactly. But here's the thing. If Kevin Smith set that up and put that up as his merch, he'd get
You're right. 20 years ago, they'd be like, that's not real. That cannot be true. Fast forward to 20 years later.
Jesus isn't Japanese.
Is it like these ones?
Kind of like that, but smaller. like really chibi. Like,
oh, okay.
So,
oh, sorry.
Wow. That's what you're that not supposed
me.
To do.
That was not me.
That was the stand's fault. That was not my fault.
Okay. Anything else that you want to talk about?
You ever heard the thing where the controversy where, not a controversy, obviously, but when Kevin Smith joined in with the protest?
Yes, I
saw the YouTube. Yeah. It's great looking back at stuff 20 years later, but that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So he trolled one of the protesters and actually stood behind the person on the news with a sign. I was like,
well, supposedly somebody recognized him.
Oh, really?
Supposedly, and then he said, oh, no, people always mistake
me. Yeah, I just look like the guy.
I just look like the guy.
Which is something that I totally would do.
But I mean, like you said, it doesn't sound like any of these protesters saw the movie, so what do they know?
Exactly.
Like, you wouldn't know Kevin Smith from, like, another neckbeard.
So, Den, overall thoughts on the movie?
I thought it was really good. It's still, like I said, not a comedy. But I think it's well. Don't take my word for it, because I actually like Geely.
No,
not Geely.
Jersey Girl.
Okay. I actually like Jersey Girl.
No one likes Geely.
I know exactly. I like Jersey Girl, and even though it got panned. But I think, again, one of the reasons why I loved Jersey Girl is because it was Kevin Smith trying to be serious. Kevin Smith trying to be a little bit more mature. And I think this was, Dogma was his first foray into it. So I think it's a really good movie.
In terms of the VSQ universe, it's probably in the higher tier for me, just because it's so much different than everything else. Entertaining for sure. It is not for me. There's never been a controversy about it. It's just movies or pop culture in general. Like, if you're taking to heart so much like religious tones on something, feel free to let them interpret things however they want, because that's their interpretation. And you don't, like, with everything else, your interpretation is always going to be different from someone else's. So like I've been telling people for the last couple of weeks, your beliefs are your beliefs. Feel free to enjoy them, but for to be a good person, don't push your beliefs on it to anybody mm-hmm. else. So
I agree. Very nice, Harold. You should write a movie.
Nah.
we're doing the In and Out, remember?
No.
No, never mind.
Excuse me. I still really like the movie. Oh, what?
Dennis said In and Out.
No. Still really like the movie. 20 years later, really solid. Still stands up. Some of the CGI is a little questionable. Actually, no, most of it is like practical effects. So besides the poop monster, the wings were nice touch. Acting is really well done.
Alan Rickman.
They just build around him and go from there. It is wonderful.
Can't anymore.
No. Excuse me, but I think it's kind
he's
of a
the
crazy.
He's the 14th apostle now.
Oh,
the actual voice now.
That's why I remember when people were when Alan Rickman passed away. One of those memes was the voice of God has been silenced.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And I was like, dang,
rough.
It sucks.
So yeah, it's actually really a really great snapshot of the 90s. I want to say besides the cast. Of like just seeing who was important, who was a big deal back then, and the fact that you'd cast Alanis Morissette, bless her. I think her music is now turned into like she's in ABBA territory now because they've turned her music into a freaking musical. So, which is crazy to me because, correct me if I'm wrong again, Harold, but like her songs back then were like pretty controversial too. Like she like cursed
about
one
Dave Coulier.
Yeah, jeez, I know, dude, still can't believe. Ooh. You know. It's crazy what was controversial back then, and now it's just like passé, or at least you know, it's like a little footnote in history. But still, a really good movie. Definitely, it's weird that this is one of the first ones that Kevin Smith actually really got into fantasy. I haven't seen Tusk or Yoga Hosers, which I think is another one.
As Kevin Smith says, nobody really has.
I know. I saw Red State. I think it's on Netflix now. I enjoyed
Red State.
Okay, that's his most recent one. Like,
no,
he gets a little...
it's a long time ago.
Oh, okay. This one with Ralph and Ralph Garman and his.
He was in
friends.
A part, but it was more. It was because it was that. Ironically enough, it was about religion again. Because what's that?
Oh, okay.
I thought it was like the West thing. Baptist, the West Baptist Church.
Yeah. The one that always protests everything.
It was like his version of that.
Oh, I didn't. Okay, I thought it was like a political thing. Anyway, I guess I got to check it out. I'm kind of a lapsed Kevin Smith fan, and I know he's got that new movie, the Jay and Silent Bob reboot. That unfortunately I haven't seen yet, but I think it's on Amazon now. So I think we should sit down and do like a Kevin Smith, episode one of these days. We just love the Smiths.
Yeah,
you know the Wills and the Kevins.
Not the Morrissey.
All right, that's it.
That's it for us today. Wow, that was pretty good, guys. Yeah. Considering that it's been a month since we recorded, it's almost like we remembered who we were, yes. You know, and that we accepted Lewis back into the fold.
I'm so happy to be here.
It's funny that he had to reapply.
I just said he was forgiven. You know,
no, I mean, I gave him an application and he had to fill it out. Why do you deserve this position?
Jeez, tell me one joke.
Comedy's hard. I told you that.
Okay, how about another joke? Well, look, that's why we have this... Well, I was going to say straight man, but never mind.
Wait a second. I am.
Yeah, you're the straight man, Lewis. Wink, wink.
Hint, hint.
Hint, hint. Okay, that is it for us today.
That's not your eye that's winking.
That's your Golgotha.
Damn it, see?
The poop monster.
I mean, comedy's not hard for Harold, I guess.
That's the only thing that's not hard.
Well, I like the fact that both of you thought of two things that could be winking, and Harold went for...
I went for the brown hole.
And, of course, you went for the other one.
Yeah.
That's why you're the straight man. That is it for us today. Hopefully you enjoyed our episode. As usual, please make sure to like and share because, you know, we want to be validated. And thank you for those people who have been listening to our podcast. I hope you've been enjoying it. As usual, you can take a look at all of our episodes, at least what's available on the... Hold on. The twofanboysonecasual.podbean.com for all of our content.
And on Facebook, you can find us, Two Fanboys and A Filthy Casual. Every time the podcast goes live, we'll be posting it there. Not to mention our group. Feel free to add us on the on our Facebook group. Anytime there's fun news, memes, jokes going around the internet, we'll be posting it there.
And then don't forget, on both Instagram and Twitter, we
Wait, you have to, go ahead. But once you tell us where we are, you have to, like, take a deep breath so you can
mention everything.
Every single, okay.
But for the Twitter and Instagram, two fanboys, one casual. And here we go. Let's see if I can remember all this. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio. Spotify. Did I say Spotify? Yes. And then, what's the other one? Stitcher.
Nice.
And basically anywhere you can find podcasts, we have somehow found our way to be legitimized on those things
Wormed our way into your hearts.
Jeez.
If you can get some reviews on some of those things, that'd be fantastic. Oh,
for the love of God, please.
Yeah.
That is it for us today. Hopefully you enjoyed our episode. Tune in next week for our latest one. As usual, this is Dennis.
This is still Lewis. Yay.
Can we get Krisha back?
I think so, dude.
I think she's at the door. Get out.
We're still waiting for your name.
Harold. Oh. Sorry.
See you later. Bye.
Have we established that already?